Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon.
You said we're headed to war in Iraq. I don't know why you say that. I hope we're not headed to war in Iraq. I'm the person who gets to decide, not you.
President Bush chatting with reporters on New Year's Eve Day outside of the best little coffee shop in Crawford, Texas, perhaps the only coffee shop in Crawford, Texas. The president expressed his hope for a diplomatic solution in Iraq, but declared that military forces are in the area, and they are there to remind Saddam Hussein that he will be disarmed either by choice or by force. Dan Shore joins us now. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning, Scott, and a happy new year to you.
And also to you. Putting to one side for a moment any constitutional question about deciding to go to war, putting aside for the moment the idea of whether or not the UN Security Council will weigh in, do you believe that President Bush is as genuinely undecided about his course in Iraq as he sounded with reporters a couple days ago?
Well, not if you heard him yesterday at Fort Hood, Texas, when he told the troops of the 1st Cavalry, if Saddam doesn't disarm, quote, you will be fighting, not to conquer anybody, but to liberate people. Then he becomes testy if you assume he's headed for war. I'll tell you, Scott, that if our president is trying to keep Saddam Hussein guessing, I don't know, but he's doing a good job with the rest of us.
Well, is it at the same time, short of a coup d'etat, which some people do not rule out, short of absolute compliance, of which the U.S. and Britain have said they see no sign, that there'd be this buildup in the Gulf and suddenly they come steaming home?
I mean, is it conceivable he can do all that and still not fight? Well, you have to expand the word conceivable for a situation like this. You know, I keep hearing somewhere in my youth a song that based on the Humpty Dumpty thing that ran, the king's horses and all the king's men, they marched up the hill and they marched down again. I don't think a president can put himself in a position of doing that, not without a political price to pay in terms of being taken seriously. Mm-hmm. So one would say that ordinarily a president who keeps saying, you will be fighting to liberate people, you will be fighting, that after he has said that, he really has to go the course. And yet, somehow, I don't know about this president.
UN inspectors have been at work in Iraq for about 5 weeks. So far, no flashpoints that we know anything about. When will we know, if anything, about what they've discovered about banned weaponry?
Well, officially, we'll know on January 27th when the inspection team reports to the United Nations Security Council. Unofficially, it would appear that after 5 weeks, they haven't found anything very damaging yet. They have yet to talk to scientists and technicians. They're trying to arrange the terms on which they will do that. So far, no smoking gun, no smoking bomb. So January 27th, the Security Council begins then to review the situation. Under present conditions, is unlikely to authorize military action. But the American administration has made clear that it really won't be bound by that. It's indicated that it now already considers Saddam Hussein in material breach of resolution because he's been firing on U.S. planes, because he's made an incomplete declaration, whatever. It is whether or not he goes without the United Nations is what's going to be the big problem. Without much in the way of allies, if he's going to do it alone or with Britain and a couple of others.
At the same time, of course, there's question about the state of Iraq's weaponry.
Yes.
There is no question that North Korea has access to, or soon will have access to, nuclear weapons because they've said as much. So the president, of course, chose different language speaking with reporters last Tuesday.
I believe this is not a military showdown. This is a diplomatic showdown, and we can resolve this peacefully.
Now, a couple of columnists this week, at least a couple, have raised this question. How to account for the difference in policy towards a state that may or may not have weapons of mass destruction and one that almost for certain does?
Well, here there are two charter members of the Axis of Evil and being treated very, very differently. And why? For one thing, I guess, because the United States doesn't want to get too far out of step with the very important neighbors of North Korea, South Korea, China, Russia. Mm-hmm. But maybe more to the point, Secretary of State Powell has said that when you bomb a working reactor, there could be a release of fallout over a very wide area. Mm-hmm. That means that if you can assume, and apparently this administration does assume, that they've got a couple of nuclear warheads already and will soon have more, the Bush doctrine of preemption doesn't work if it's too late to preempt. In other words, North Korea has now to be treated like a member of the nuclear club and not simply an applicant for the nuclear club, and that takes much milder handling.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask, senior Japanese and South Korean officials will be in Washington, D.C. this weekend to, in fact, address themselves to some of these questions. They're supposed to issue a statement on Monday. Do you have any expectation about what might be in there?
Well, South Korea has offered to mediate between the United States and the North Korean government. It's very interesting that South Korea, one of America's staunchest allies, America fought a war to save South Korea, now offers to be a neutral mediating between the two. On the surface, that should be doable. America says it doesn't plan any military action against North Korea. Kim Il-sung says he wants to have that in writing in a non-aggression pact before he gives up nuclear weapons, and he wants some economic aid as well. That would sound like a fairly bridgeable difference, but the United States says it doesn't want to talk before North Korea has given up its nuclear weapons. What is alarming is that the United States is not able to bring along the important neighbors of North Korea. And the question is, if they know where they want to go, which is a nuclear-free peninsula, which they agree on, the question is how you get there. And that seems to be a more difficult question than it should be.
A couple of more Democrats raised their heads over the hedgerows this week. Senator John Edwards of North Carolina, House Democratic leader Richard Gephardt is expected to enter the race next week. Putting aside the fact that potential candidates are always marking their territory one way or another, are these candidacies formally beginning earlier than they even used to?
Oh, well, yes. The name of the game has now become attracting early money. That becomes a measure of your viability. In recent years, it has been so, I think, in almost every election in the past 20 years, maybe there might be one exception, that the one who has collected the most money before the primary season has begun ends up winning the nomination. Mm-hmm. So by the time of the Iowa caucus, New Hampshire primary, the nomination race may be effectively over. I don't know why they don't simply say that a year from now, say in January, before anything's happened, you count up how much money each one has and say, he gets the nomination, never mind primaries, maybe never mind the convention.
Save a lot of hanging chads.
Yeah.
listen, 108th Congress starts to work on Tuesday, and White House is expected to propose sweeping changes to Medicare, an economic package that'll feature a $300 billion tax cut. Is there going to be much of a fight?
Well, first of all, no longer a stimulus package. They now call it a growth package. Secondly, it would give tax cuts, according to various think tanks, 64% of the benefits would go to the wealthiest 5% of the taxpayers. Non-bipartisanship, don't expect too much of it.
Thanks, Dan Shore.